Jen, I'm so pumped to have you here on the summit. Thank you so much for joining us today and like gifting us with your wisdom.
Oh, you're so welcome, Sindra, and thank you so much for having me as a part of the summit. I'm really excited.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. And I appreciate your friendship. And I know that I can call you when I'm struggling with something. So I want to say that like just publicly to everyone.
Thank you. The feeling's certainly mutual. I so appreciate and value our friendship and your mentorship over the years.
So I want to start with something fun. And I want to ask you, like, what's a fun fact about you?
A fun fact about me. Actually, I've been really excited about this lately. I am 1 month away from completing a challenge that I set for myself a year ago. I want to swim in open water without a wetsuit once per month for a year. And wow. I just have April left.
Wow, once per month for a year. So give us a sense of like what that means for you. And that's a really big goal. So why is it such a big goal for you specifically?
So it's a big goal for me because I'm actually training to swim the English Channel, hopefully this summer. That's when it's planned, but you know, there's so many things in flux right now. But I'm still training as though that's a part of what I'll be working towards this summer. And this challenge is just a part of some of the other training that I do. I do a lot more training than one swim per month, of course, but I thought it might kind of just help with confidence and be a fun challenge in terms of my like cold tolerance training to get in the water at least once a month without a wetsuit. To be quite honest, I thought the hardest months were behind me with December, January, February done. The water was down in the high 30s.
Oh my goodness.
Actually, December wasn't that cold, but January, February were in the high 30s. But now I'm not so sure because it could be difficult to find an open beach for April. So we'll see.
Oh, wow. And what is it going to look like when you swim the English Channel? Like how long is it going to take you? And give us just a sense of like what a big deal that is.
So to me, it's a big deal. I attempted the swim in 2012 and was unsuccessful. I actually had kind of a really challenging experience out there and ended up in the hospital for a few days. So this is my comeback swim. Wow. It's probably going to take me in the range of 10 to 16 hours, which I realize is a huge gap. And I have to be mentally prepared to do anything on either end of that spectrum or even maybe further out if it gets out into the outlier range. But it's so weather dependent that you just kind of have to be ready to swim until you hit France.
Yeah, awesome. 10 to 16 hours of swimming. Just put your mind around that for those people who are swimming. I could do that I couldn't even run that long.
I'm not sure I could run that long either, Sindra.
tell us what the high performance mindset means to you.
So to me, a high performance mindset is about one's ability to constantly adopt a growth-oriented perspective regardless of the challenge at hand.
Yeah.
So it's our ability to, even in the midst of adversity and chaos like we're in right now, figure out, okay, what are the controllables? What are the things outside of my control? And then most importantly, how can I make this situation work for me rather than against me?
Nice. What does that mean for you instead of against you?
So I think there's really two ways to look at this. And I don't want to underscore that there's a lot of real true suffering out there right now. And a lot of people are in really challenging situations.
Absolutely.
But even in some of those really uncertain and arduous challenges that people find themselves in, we can either look at the situation as something that's happening to me, that's causing all sorts of adversity, that's setting me back, that's really causing a lot of frustration and angst in my life. Or we can adopt a mindset, really what I would call a mindset of growth of, okay, this is a really crappy situation and there's a lot of things to be upset about, but what are the silver linings I can find here? How can I focus on what I do have control over?
Yeah.
And maybe even yet, how can I actually grow as a human, as a leader, as an athlete from this experience?
Yeah. Awesome. I think that's a really important perspective and the ability to adapt and have like this perspective of growth. So excellent definition. In your opinion, Jen, what role do you think that mindset plays in adversity and change?
I think it's huge. I mean, we're constantly going through change and challenges in life, but probably no more so right now.
Yeah.
I think the habits that we set in motion now during this period are really going to be habits that persist with us in the long run. And if we set great mindset and effective thinking habits right now, then I think when other forms of change inevitably come our way in the future, those habits will be things that we fall back on because of how we've operated during this time. And if you think about any sort of change or adversity, there's that opportunity to view it as threat or challenge, whether it's working against you or for you. And I think the best in the world are really good at looking at what are the opportunities here, what are the controllables, and how can I work on the areas that fall within my control.
Absolutely. And I think about habits, in my opinion, I'm thinking about my life, my family's life. It's like, okay, habits of exercise, habits of sleep, habits of eating. I think about like also habits of like how you're treating people during this time in your family. Those are the habits I'm thinking about that I want to make sure that like are good habits I'm sustaining in 2 or 3 or 4 months, whenever, we don't know how long this is going to last, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, a colleague of mine that I really respect at the Center for Enhanced Performance at West Point was talking about how like adversity isn't just an opportunity for growth. Adversity also brings out kind of the core of who we are, and our character really shows. So people that have really great habits, like that's shining through right now. And those are really highlighted under these times of stress and change. Mm-hmm. And people that maybe aren't operating in the best of ways in those areas that you just brought up are maybe struggling a little bit more. But that doesn't mean that this isn't still a tremendous opportunity to work on those areas. And I still am a big believer that if we make changes now that are more in line with our values and habits that we desire, those are going to be very, very long lasting and strong habits.
Mm-hmm. So when you think about like good mindset habits, like, good mindset habits, there we go. We're talking about habits, but is there anything in particular that you think, you know, outside of this time that you think like is really important for us to have as in terms of a good mindset habit or within this time?
Yeah. So, I mean, I when I think about mindset, one of the first things that comes to mind is my late mentor and dear friend, Dr. Ken Revisa, used to constantly say, you can't control what goes on around you, but you can choose to control how you respond to it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I said that wrong. You can't control what goes on around you, but you can control how you choose to respond to it. And I can still hear his voice in my head saying it just that way. And he had a special, unique nature about him. But the message of that to me is really trying to figure out where you're choosing to put your attitude and your effort. So those things that we always have control over, our mindset, basically. Mm-hmm. And there's so many things to worry and stress about right now, so many unknowns. And if we put our energy and our attitude into those things, then we're really doing ourselves a disservice. We're coming out of the present moment when we start thinking about things like, you know, when will we return to work or a normal way of functioning? Will loved ones of mine get laid off or furloughed or worse yet sick? What's going to happen with the economy? What's going to happen with athletics or with my job and my career? Yeah. There are so many questions right now. It's really overwhelming when we start getting into that thought process. And so I think just one, developing the awareness to catch when you're spiraling and when you're getting into those uncontrollables. And then two, developing the ability to not necessarily push them down, because I don't think those things are going to go away, but having the awareness to accept that I don't need to control all those things right now, but this is what I can do.
Yeah, excellent. And I appreciate what you said about like awareness is really important. And the idea that the uncontrollables, when we focus on them, lead to like future-oriented thinking, right? Mm-hmm. Like I kind of think about it as like it leads to frustration or blame or not peak performance. But I didn't really think before about how it like it leads to future-based thinking and some of these things that make us worry. And especially right now, when there's so many things that we can't control, how long this is going to last. What the regulations are in place, how those are going to change, how our work is going to change. Appreciate that. So when you think about, Jen, like a top mindset tool that we can use to deal with uncertainty and change, do you have one that you can think of that would really help us right now?
Yeah, absolutely. And it kind of falls in line with that control the controllables theme. I've been sharing this with cadets at West Point. Part of my day job is I'm the assistant director for the performance psychology program at the Center for Enhanced Performance. And one thing I've been sharing with cadets all week is this activity I call act or accept.
Act or accept,
right? And essentially you list out all the stuff, right? On a you know, old school pen and paper, you know, spend some time away from the screen and write out all the things going on, the good, the bad, the ugly, the controllables, the uncontrollables, everything going on. And then you take a red pen, if you have one, or just cross off everything you don't have control over and circle the things you do have control over. And there might be things on that list where there's elements of both. And so then you split those off into two things, right? So I don't necessarily have control over the number of people using Wi-Fi in the house right now.
Right.
But I do have control over when I choose to schedule meetings that require more bandwidth and how I set up my workspace, right? So once you've done that, then you break those two different categories of things into actions or acceptance. And that's the hard part, right? Taking the controllables and building out a plan, right? So how can I, you know, improve my time management skills or my sleep habits or, you know, deliberately use screen time instead of mindlessly scrolling through some of the less productive apps that I have on my phone? What are ways that I can build habits to increase physical fitness during this challenging time, right? So the action parts is just about planning, processing, and then building those great habits. The acceptance part, I think, is a little bit harder, but that's taking those uncontrollables and then having the ability to just accept that they're going to be present, that we might not know the answers or the solutions to those challenges for some time. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily, again, not you know, eliminating them or pretending like they don't exist, but just accepting that that's going to be here for a while. I don't have control over that. And I can let that go for now.
Yeah. So act in it, or so you're saying write it all down and then decide to put it in two columns, either act or accept. And accept your things that you can't control, things that, you know, maybe later on you think about, but right now you let them be. And I appreciate that because I'm thinking about the action phase, right? And how sometimes we can get stuck in our own way. And just by starting something, I think about how it's like the start that stops me, right? It's like, okay, just by taking action is going to help me build those good mindset habits or those just good like physical habits that we're working to establish right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Awesome. Jen, what do you think is in the way of people developing a high performance mindset?
Oh man, that's a good question. honestly, I think it boils down to two things. One, I think is lack of awareness. And two, I think is fear.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's other factors too, but to me, those are big ones.
Those are big ones.
Without awareness, we really can't identify that we're using an ineffective mindset. So it sort of stops there, right? We just, we're dead in the water and we stay stuck in that place of not being super effective and focusing on the uncontrollables. So if you're not doing something like this, I think, you know, developing and maintaining awareness is a deliberate process. And it could look different ways for different people, but spending some time reflecting on your thinking habits or journaling, talking with mentors or peers, having kind of like self-care routines that allow you to check in with yourself and your thoughts and your emotions. For some people, it's meditating or doing any sort of mindfulness practice.
Yeah.
But I think that deliberate reflection helps us develop that awareness. Mm-hmm. And it's not like a one and done type of thing. It's not like once you have high awareness, you're set. I think it's a constant evolution of just spending time with yourself, reflecting on what's going on and how you're processing things. And maintaining that awareness is essential.
Yeah, when you think about fear, what are your thoughts on how that holds us back? Because I completely agree. Share what you're thinking, and then I'll share some thoughts I have about fear.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I love talking about fear. One of the populations that I most enjoy working with at West Point are cadets that have to engage in some sort of performance that involves a performance-related fear. So for example, we have cadets that have to do, an underwater subsurface swim that involves long breath holding, and maybe they have a fear of drowning, or they have to enter deep water from a 6-foot high tower, or do rappelling or other things from a height, and perhaps they have a fear of heights. And of course, every cadet has to perform at some point or another, and plenty of them have a fear of performance or evaluation by others. So we work a lot in that space, and I think there's a lot of things that can help. The traditional mental skills of imagery and thought stopping, rationalizing the fear and the physical responses that go along with anxiety and fight or flight, relaxation strategies to cope with that as well. Those are all, typical skills that we'll teach. And then another one that I think has been really powerful, at least personally in my life, is affirmations or power phrases, if you will.
Yeah.
And I think we can deliberately select those to cope with a particular fear. I'll share an example from my swimming experience where, I've got actually, ironically, a huge fear of sharks. I do swimming in the open water all the time. I grew up, in a coastal area in Southern California. I was a junior lifeguard. I go for ocean swims all the time, but I'm still terrified of sharks. And for whatever reason, I don't think that they exist out in Southern California, but everywhere else they are. So one year I was preparing for a marathon swim between two islands in Hawaii.
Okay.
And I was swimming with three other guys. We're going to do a tandem swim. So where you swim side by side and you're followed by your escort boat. And of course, the first thought that came to mind was all the other sharks that are in Hawaii, tiger sharks and great white sharks. Of course, we have those in California too. But again, I'm sort of like desensitized to that. But I knew I needed some skills that I didn't already have to work on. So one, I sought to just learn a little bit about shark behavior, arm myself with some knowledge to empower kind of how I was feeling about the situation.
Okay.
And I came up with plans with the guys I'd be swimming with, like if then statements, if we see this type of shark, then this is what we'll do. If the shark behaves this way, then this is what we'll do. Because the thing with channel swimming is if you get on the boat or you touch anyone, your swim's over, it's disqualified. And so if you're late in the swim, like you don't really want to necessarily get out because you've invested all that time, energy, and it's not necessarily the cheapest sport either. So we had our plan. And then I also had my fear statements, my affirmations about sharks. Okay. Some I've collected over the years from other awesome marathon swimmers. And one that I learned from a great friend of mine was make your decision on the beach, right? So assess the odds, assess, the pros and the cons, what's the likelihood of the risk. And if the pros outweigh the cons, then you've made your decision and you do that on the beach rather than in the water after the swim has begun.
Okay.
So I show up to the swim. It's 3 a.m. It's pitch black. We're starting early because it's a long swim. And two of the three guys have numbers written out along their arms and their legs. And I'm young, naive. I'm in my second year of marathon swimming. And I was very confused. And I was asking them like, what are these numbers all about? And they said, well, these are our social security numbers. We have families at home.
Oh my gosh.
So.
Oh my gosh.
Make your decision on the beach. And I just kept repeating that. Make your decision on the beach. And I decided to start this one. So we get in, the water is just beautiful. It's dark outside. The moonlight's glistening off the surface. There's a little bit of chop. We're finding our rhythm. We're getting a little bit of, jellyfish strings that are stinging us, nothing major. The sun comes up and this gorgeous, beautiful, clear blue Hawaiian water with 80 to 100 foot visibility. And there's not a thing down there because we're pretty far from shore at this point. We're a few miles off, a couple hours in. And all of a sudden we see this one little fish down below us. And I'm thinking, well, that's interesting. We haven't seen anything for a while, but first life of the day. That's great. And this fish starts getting a little bit higher, a little bit higher, a little bit higher. And all of a sudden it's not such a little fish anymore. And I realize that this is the man in gray. So it's an 8 to 10 foot shark. It's difficult to tell, but now it's 20 to 30 feet below us and just kind of rising and swimming at our pace. And so I do as I'd planned, as I turn to the side for my breath, I just exhaled and yelled shark very loudly just so that the crew could identify what's going on and then corral in and protect us with the kayak and the boat and the clump of swimmers in the middle, this flotilla that they were creating. And then I, next couple breaths just said, not tiger, which was important because a tiger shark meant we were going to get on the boat. Anything else, we're going to wait and determine its behavior. So we continued swimming and I kept my eye on the thing because for some reason it felt better to look at it than to not. And then I got into my other phrases, my other affirmations. The shark you see isn't the one you need to worry about. And people pay good money for this. And over time of repeating that, I was able to gently and slowly bring my heart rate down from probably 200 plus, which is totally unsustainable for an 18-mile swim, and get to the place where I could actually take in the beauty and be present with it. You see, the thing about sharks is they're incredibly hydrodynamic. They're meant to be in the water. And for this shark to swim at our pace, going at the same rate that we were, would be the equivalent if you got up after this call, walked out to your porch and saw a snail and just walked alongside it for a few hours.
Okay. Okay.
And that's what happened to us this day, is the shark stayed with us for the next 3 hours. And there were times where my heart rate spiked again, and I would get nervous and get afraid, especially if it left and came back. But for the most part, those statements that I'd practiced over and over again and rehearsed to myself so much that they were common nature, just kept getting repeated and kept helping me be in the present and take in the beauty of it, because it truly was a once in a lifetime experience. And if I hadn't practiced that mindset beforehand, I'm not sure I would have been able to view it that way.
Oh my gosh, Jen. First of all, I had goosebumps as you were telling the story, and to know that you swam with a shark for 3 hours.
It's pretty intense.
And you could use these mental skills. I was thinking a couple of different things about make the decision on the beach and like what that means like in life, right? To me, it means like being all in on the task once you decide that you've made the commitment. But then the two statements that really helped you that you said were like, the shark that you see is not the shark that you need to worry about. And people pay good money for this.
It's true. They do.
Why did you choose those? And like, how did those help you?
So the first one, the shark you see isn't what you need to worry about, was just from my research on shark behavior and learning more about that, which a friend advised me to do. Lenny Wiersma at Cal State Fullerton suggested, like, just learning about shark behavior might be a little bit empowering. And excuse me. And while it's been difficult to, like, you know, see these images when I'm on the internet looking for information about various types of sharks, it's been helpful knowing that, you know, when sharks are in the environment, they are no longer interested in you as prey. They're apex predators. They attack about 40 miles an hour from below and beneath, and you're not going to know that it's happening. And I know that sounds a little bit morbid, sure, but at least for the purposes of swimming when a shark's there, it made me feel much better. And then the other one, people pay good money for this, is just about, you know, this is like a once in a lifetime experience that many people, you know, seek out when they're traveling to, you know, ocean-faring communities and sometimes even engage in chumming, which is actually really bad for health, the health and growth of sharks. And I wasn't having to do that, yet I was still getting this amazing, incredible experience that really the shark was giving us. And it's a weird way of looking at it, but I felt really lucky to be with it. And the ocean was sort of giving us that incredible experience that day, free of charge.
Free of charge.
Yeah.
So what was it like when you were really present with the shark?
Oh, it was amazing. It did not feel like 3 hours at all. And you would just get into this rhythm, which is common sometimes in marathon swimming, but just on another level with this beautiful, graceful creature beneath us. And it was almost like we were doing this dance. Like it was so clear that it was working probably really hard to go as slow as a human swimmer. And it was just there for the experience. It was curious, and you know, we were curious about it too. And it was just this amazing, graceful, beautiful creature surrounded by the deepest blue you could imagine. It was beautiful. I'll never forget it.
And what was it like when the shark left?
Not as fun. I didn't like it when it would leave. So during the 3 hours, it occasionally would leave and come back. And I always was more nervous when it left. And again, knowing about shark behavior, right, I wanted to have my eyes on the guy. But you know, it came back. And then at the end of its 3 hour tour with us, it never came back. And I don't know, he must've gone off to go do some other short things. I'm not going to lie. I thought about it several times after that. I wondered what it was doing and where it was. But again, just getting back to my stroke, to my swimming, and some of the cues that kind of bring me back into the present moment when I swim,
right,
and those mental skills, you know, I kept working those the rest of the swim for sure.
I think about how, right, fear is future-based, is a future-based emotion. So as I heard you tell the story, I was thinking about how, right, you're wondering what the shark was going to do, and it was like being ready for that. But what helped you was to stay in the present with your breathing or with these statements and the information. I think that's important to know. So when you think about right now, this is a time of a lot of fear and anxiety for a lot of people. You know, am I going to get sick? What's going to happen with my finances? I mean, sometimes there's fear. I'm also thinking about people that are less privileged than me as I say that. Like, legitimately fear about basic needs and maybe the people that you're living with. And maybe that's not a good situation right now. So what did you learn about fear that you could apply to this to all of us?
I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head with fear being a future-based emotion. It absolutely is. I think some of the things I've learned about fear just from my own experiences, but also working with others that experience it, and then just hearing from others that are dealing with tremendous amounts of fear and anxiety right now, is getting back to what we can do right now and focusing on the controllables. I know I've said that a lot, but that really gets us back in the present moment.
Right.
We don't know if we're going to get sick. And many of us don't know the certainties of the future, and our job stability may be in question, and financial difficulties may arise if they have not already. But coming back to what am I in control over right now? How can I gather as much knowledge and prepare myself as best as possible to deal with, you know, an uncertain future? I think that's just as important. But then at the end of the day, when it comes time to be present with other people, using some of those phrases to bring ourselves back to the present moment and back to the controllables is so important. So creating some affirmations or power phrases for yourself that have to do with your particular situation, repeating them over and over again, and then using them to get back into the present when we stray off into the future, I think has been really helpful.
Excellent. And if then statements, I thought that was powerful as well, that you thought about that. If this happens, then I will do this, to help you kind of plan. And the information gathering, I thought that was important about the sharks, you know, that you gathered the information so you knew how to handle it. So I think it's also important to know the information about what's happening with COVID-19 right now. But then we can live so much in the future where we're consumed by that information or constantly checking for updates. And I know the first week, that's what I did. I was like looking at the cases in Minnesota every morning. And then I was like, okay, this is not helpful, Syndra.
Yeah, yeah.
You can control staying at home. You can control, you know, protecting your family. So I had to get back to right here, right now.
Yeah. Yeah, you bring up an excellent point. I think, you know, with all the news coming out and all the information out there, it is very possible and quite easy to get into information overload mode,
right,
and almost kind of cope by getting too into all of that. And so while I think it's important to know what's going on in your area and what's going on in the country right now, it's also important to be able to shut that off and focus on those controllables.
How have you during this time developed your high performance mindset, or just generally, how do you develop yours?
So, I mean, I'm, like I mentioned at the beginning of this, I'm still competing. I'm still training for the English Channel as though it's happening. And so I think, you know, one of the challenges for me has been just to kind of adjust my training, but equally importantly, to adjust my perspective of that training. There's not a pool open in the area that I have access to. And so I've been, you know, working out mostly on land and doing different things that have nothing to do with swimming. And ironically, I feel like I'm maybe in some of the best shape I've ever been in my life, but I also haven't touched the water more than, you know, once a week in the, you know, in the very, very cold ocean for short periods of time, you know, in almost a month now. So I haven't really been consistently swimming, and I'm very much out of swim shape, yet having one of the biggest kind of swim goals I've ever taken on in my life later this summer.
Right.
So I find myself occasionally, and I occasionally find myself letting the mind wander into the what ifs, like, will that be canceled? Or what if I'm not ready for it? It's not canceled. And then of course the other worries that I think we're all dealing with, but just the awareness of, hey, I'm going down this path and it's not really helping me right now. And then having some tools to bring myself back to the present. You know, the phrase I've been using for training is, what you're doing today is exactly the perfect thing you need to be doing right now.
Nice.
And you know, that's for a variety of reasons, but it's keeping me safe. It's keeping me healthy. It's keeping others safe. And so sometimes just getting on the rowing machine and cranking out like an hour there instead of what I would normally do in the pool, that's exactly the most perfect thing I need to be doing that day.
That's helpful for those people who maybe have experienced a loss of sport, or it's a really good perspective just to think about, like, what can I do today to get better? And just this idea that whatever I'm doing today is perfect for where I should be. Do you have any other, you've already given us so much, but is there anything else that you're thinking about that you want to share with us in terms of a strategy or tool or a perspective that might be really helpful at this time?
Absolutely. Yeah. You brought up the transition and sport part of this too. And I think that's been a real challenge for many people. I mean, a lot of people have lost things, both temporary and permanent. But our student athletes are a group of people that come, you know, first and foremost to my mind. And I remember that week when they canceled sport, and just knowing, you know, we didn't know much about how this was going to impact everything else yet at that time. Yes. But just my heart going out to those senior student athletes that were not going to have another opportunity. So one of the first things I did was reach out to both check in with and offer support to all the senior cadet athletes that I'd worked with, and others too. I do a little bit in private practice. And so just reaching out and trying to be present for them and help them. And it is a grieving process. And that week I had tons of conversations about dealing with the loss of a season and in many cases, one sport in their athletic career. The lessons they'd learned from sport, the meaning of sport and how it shaped them to be who they are. There were a lot of tears and a lot of challenging conversations, but you know, I'll never forget one theme that kept coming up more so than I anticipated. And this one young cadet captured it best. He was a senior on his season that was canceled, and it was his final season. And had his season gone well, he would have had the opportunity to potentially play at the next level. And of course, there was the devastation of the lost opportunity and the loss of sport and the loss of being with that group of guys one more season. But in that conversation, he pivoted to, but you know what, Jen, I'm going to take the lessons that I've learned from sport, and I'm really excited to develop them in my leadership style and apply them to leading soldiers as an officer in the Army. And I thought that was just such a sign of both maturity and really a high performance mindset, that ability to find the opportunity in that loss. Yes. and pivot eventually. It's not to say that devastation isn't there. It was, he was grieving, mm-hmm. but it was the ability to focus on what he had control over.
Yeah. Awesome. Great story of just how he was able to shift his perspective and think about what are the lessons he's learned now that during sport that are going to help him later. What's a lesson you are learning during this time of COVID-19? You're living in New York, so yes. I think that's an important perspective. I'm living in Minnesota. We have the lowest amount of cases, I just learned yesterday, and the least doubling of those cases. So our governor is an incredible leader and keeping us on track. So,
that's wonderful. I'm happy to hear that, Sindra. I think that's really great leadership, too. And I think, you know, being one of the first places in the country to experience a high rate of this, you know, we're definitely fighting from behind the curve. Yeah. You know, one of the things that's really kind of stood out to me the most from this time is the importance of human connection and also the depth of human resilience. You know, I know there's been a ton of tragedy going on, both big and small. But I'm constantly just blown away by the number of people doing selfless things. And it could be anything, you know, from as small as offering to get your elder neighbor their groceries, to checking in with that colleague you don't know that well, to having kind of more social connections with people. We're social distancing, but I think it's really physical distancing, and reaching out, connecting with others has been so powerful for many people. And then there's the big things too, like, you know, our governor called for any, you know, retired healthcare workers that wanted to come out of retirement and help, you know, fight the front lines of this disease. And over 76,000 people came out of retirement to help those healthcare workers. It was absolutely just an incredible showing of, you know, human service. And then over 12,000 mental health professionals offered to give their services for free to those healthcare workers. Just an awesome way to give back. And so that's something I've really learned, is the importance of service and helping others. You know, if you don't have skill sets in those areas, there's still stuff you can do. I know this is a very tiny thing, but one thing that I think folks like you and I can do in our profession is I started offering mindfulness classes for our local gym in hopes that that's a benefit they can give to their members, so that their members stay gym members and there's a gym to go back to when we all come back. So doing little things like that, it's a tiny thing, but anything we can do, I think, goes a long way.
Thinking about how you can give and serve during this time is a great way also to get out of your head and not overthink and really get in your heart and live it for other people. So
absolutely.
Awesome, Jen. I wrote a few notes and I want to summarize it given what, so just, I always love to do this because then people can like look back and say, oh yeah, this is what Jen said. And hopefully they are writing some notes as they're listening to you. But if they haven't yet, this is a great time to take out your notepad, pause it, and write down a few notes. Very powerful when you think about the habits that we are creating right now are going to persist in the long term. So helping us think about what are those habits that we're really creating at this point. We talked about how the uncontrollables and focusing on them can be future-based. So I thought that was really helpful. This idea of writing all the things that you're struggling with right now and then deciding if it's something that you can accept or that you can act on, right? Isn't it uncontrollable? And then how can you act on it if it's uncontrollable? Great tool that everybody can use right now and apply right to their lives at this moment. Swimming with the sharks. I've heard that story before, but wow, it was even more powerful this time. So I'm grateful to share that you shared that with us, that the if-then statements helped you, that these power phrases of, you know, the shark that you see is not the shark that you need to worry about, and people pay good money for this. If you can swim with sharks, we can get through whatever we're experiencing right now. And just the power of this information helped you, but then getting back to the present moment. And then just the idea of like, whatever we're doing right now, just reminding yourself that it's exactly what you should be doing right now, and give yourself some grace and compassion. So Jen, thanks for bringing it today to the summit. I'm so grateful to have you on, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Sindra. I'm grateful and honored to be here with you today, and I've learned so much from you, and I'm really, really excited for this High Performance Mindset Summit.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. Thank you, Jen.
Thanks.